Good morning. I'm Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM. We're so pleased to have back in our studio this week Master Sergeant Victor Rodriguez of the ROTC Battalion. Victor, welcome back to the program.
Darrell, thanks for having me back. I had such a great time last week.
You know, we were talking about your candidates, you know, what type of characteristics that you look for. And you talked about the SAL, that they're scholars, athletes, and leadership. I'd like to explore your leadership style. What is your leadership style?
That's a good question. Obviously, I've got the benefit of 20 years of experience leading soldiers, but I'd kind of consider myself to be kind of eclectic, a little bit of everything. I'm a product of experience. But at the same time, I know what tool to use for what job. And there's a time and a place for everything. And I'm pretty eclectic in that sense. I know how to be transactional. I know how to be transformative.
And when you talk about transactional, what do you mean by transactional or transformative?
Yeah. I mean, those are big words. I mean, pretty much I know how to get the job done in that sense. I've definitely got a decent command of my coercive power abilities. But at the same time, I just try to lead by example.
Is that the time I saw you with the cadet? You had his arm behind his back. He was up against the wall. No, just kidding.
Here we go with the congressional mandate. I can see the cadet right now.
But how do you deal with tough cadets? Someone who, for whatever reason, steps out of line and is not displaying the best leadership that you think they can, and you have to address it with them.
I try not to get too loud unless it's a safety situation. Yeah, right. If the guy's about to hurt himself or another cadet, I try to just facilitate what they're doing. For the most part, it's all about thinking about the consequences of their action. And if they could just think ahead a couple steps, most of the time they can figure it out themselves.
You know, outside of the work that they do, within the program that you have, does the ROTC participate in any type of community services or community involvement here in South Orange?
We do a lot of things. We do book readings like during Christmas, or we work in the elementary schools in that regard. I think every Tuesday, every last Tuesday of every month, we go to St. Joseph's in and we do the soup kitchen there. Mm-hmm. We've got 9 area junior ROTC programs that we go around and facilitate them. We take them to Color Guard events. You know, they work with the athletic teams here on Seton Hall, do Color Guard events for them. Mm-hmm. So for a 100-man program or 100-cadet program, we're out there quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard to do because our first reaction to cadets is, day laborers. You know, we can pretty much do whatever we want with them. But ROTC, every cadet is a student first.
Of course.
Yeah,
of course.
So, they have requirements, and we want them to graduate with the highest GPA as possible. Mm-hmm. But in saying that, our cadets know how to prioritize. They're great time managers, and they're definitely great at, multitasking. So.
Right. Now, as you know, Seton Hall has had a slight problem with a few muggings right offside the campus. Has anyone asked ROTC to help out with any patrolling or anything? Is that outside of your purview?
Yeah, it's a little bit outside our purview. Our cadets are they don't have any kind of medical insurance or anything like that. So, there's a lot of litigation that can run with that.
Sure.
So, so if they're outside of training or becoming lieutenants, then we definitely have to reconsider things. So we can do courtesy patrols. And we definitely encourage our cadets to go out there and advise their peers how to be smart about getting from point A to point B.
Right.
South Orange is definitely not the most lit place on the planet. So
that is a problem. I know President Esteban, he spoke with me about that at our recent University Advisory Council meeting, where he's really encouraging residents to have more lighting. And I saw a blurb in the News Record where the village president was asking for residents to really use more outdoor lighting. I mean, the ambiance of the gas lights are nice.
Yes,
but it does create a particular hazard because the people who are up to no good can hide.
Exactly. I know one of those places that ROTC has really changed, and we've worked with the Essex County Sheriff Department. Mm-hmm. The Essex County Sheriff Department at South Mountain. I mean, just our presence there and our activity.
Those at the South Mountain Reservation?
Right, just up South Orange Avenue. You'll see it there by the top apartment complex. I guess it was a hotbed of activity, loot activity, a lot of drug transactions happening there.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And, you know, we train there typically on every Friday, and that kind of leads into the early weekend activity. But with our presence there and our training and our constant, you know, communicating with the public that's there, we've helped significantly drop that population.
So when you
now.
Do your training there, how do you get there? Do they have to run up that hill?
You're exactly right. Yeah. I mean, it's about 2.5 miles walk there and a yes. 2.5 mile walk back. So it's definitely part of our physical training.
Right.
Yeah. You know, you can't lead where you can't go, pretty much. So right. We're all about running and walking.
Right. Yeah. Very nice. Very yeah. nice. And if you had to, in your opinion, how does one prepare themselves to be a great leader?
You know, one thing that you have to do to be great at anything, really, is the studies to show yourself approved. You've got to emulate the good, you know, and assess your weaknesses and build upon those weaknesses. One of the interesting things that happened in my life was I found myself at the twilight of my career trying to figure out what am I going to do when I grow up. And at the same time, my son's about to, you know, going to college, and he's asking himself the same exact question.
You look too young to have a son.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You're too nice. But we're both asking ourselves that same question. What are you going to do when you grow up? So part of that was, you know, assessing my strengths and, you know, assessing my weaknesses and you know, figuring out a pliable plan that's going to help me, you know, accomplish my goals. And, he, you know, we had a little talk about his strengths and weaknesses, too, and he subsequently got accepted to the University of Michigan. He's in
Congratulations.
Yeah, engineering yes. program. Go Blue.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I don't know how you got that, but, you know, hey. It's definitely his grandfather's genes, not mine. I can just skip the generation. But like I said, if you want to be a great leader, you got to start with the book work. You got to know yourself and just work from there.
And do you see being a leader as being a servant?
You know, there are a lot of good attributes and a lot of good arguments about being a servant leader, somebody that's there to serve. Mm. A lot of great leaders have come out of the church, you know, out of the clergy, and there is a time and a place for that. You know, there's many a times I'm actually an ordained deacon myself, so I can actually tap into that as well. But when you have to do something, you have to do it effectively and quickly. There's not a whole lot of time for discussion. There's not a whole lot of time for, you know, philosophy or a theoretical discussion. It's got to happen now.
Right.
You know, it's definitely, you definitely need the direct approach.
What are some of the major obstacles that a leader should avoid?
Major obstacles that a leader should avoid. I think the biggest thing is if you're trying to get stuff done, try not to get it personal, you know. It's all about the objective. It's all about the mission. It's all about executing things efficiently.
Right.
And there's a time and a place for everything. And getting too personal with people, people that you're trying to work with, there's a difference between being personal and social. And, you know, social settings are great. You know, they built a camaraderie. They built that whole team dynamic. But getting too personal, you know, that can be a source of contention.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's one thing that during President Obama's State of the Union address, you know, he talked about how, irregardless of what soldiers in a particular regiment might have in regards to, you know, their politics or whatever it might be, when it comes down to getting the mission done, that is the key objective.
Yeah, I know. I think he was referring to that actual Navy SEAL team that went in and took out Osama bin Laden. He was talking about the guy behind him having their back, and you know, that's all that really matters. You know, the person to your left and your person to your right. And that's historically proven. The Spartans were big advocates of the shield bearer to your left or right. And that phalanx, that tight formation.
Right.
And there's no other way to develop that camaraderie than through shared hardship. And the Spartans, they lived through it, everything together. And that's critical with leaders in the military today. I was the first sergeant in the combat engineer company, and they called me a fighting first sergeant because I wasn't afraid of getting on patrols and, you know, executing missions alongside my soldiers. And arguably one of the dangerous missions we can have. We were roadside, you know, bomb clearance guys. So, you know, I took my hits with the rest of my men, but at the same time, it helped us get through that tough time. And deployment is horrible. I mean, everybody thinks of a year deployment. It's actually really the hardest parts are not the first 2 months that you're in or the first 2 months that you're out, because you got that kind of honeymoon period in the initial stage where everybody's kind of learning the ropes and they're very attentive. And the last 2 months, you know, everybody's just so eager to get home where they're extra cautious. But it's that month 3 through month 8 where complacency has a tendency to slip in. So you got to be proactive. You got to be assertive. You have to get in there with the soldiers or, you know, with your workers and show them you're not afraid to, you know, roll up your sleeves and get dirty with these guys.
You know, one thing that we don't know as civilians is how much time during the day are you actually in harm's way? We go to work for 8 hours a day. How is it for the military when you start your day? When do you start your day and when do you end your day when you're in active duty?
Well, I guess it depends if you're in a combat zone or if you're in a garrison situation. Garrison is just kind of like a 9-to-5 job. You go. We'll do PT in the morning. Typically starts at 6:30. That'll go to about 7:30 or 8 o'clock. We'll eat breakfast, we'll shower, and then we'll go to our day job. And a lot of that's just, you know, upkeeping equipment, taking care of administrative requirements, taking care of emergency stuff, family concerns, and just making sure preparing for any kind of training events that are coming up. Some of the training events we consider, you know, consist of, you know, shooting our rifles, you know, keeping ourselves abreast of technology. But, I mean, essentially, it's a 9-to-5 job. I mean, with few exceptions, you know, out there in the weather, you know, in the elements, in the environment. Other than that, you're in a dry, heated office, motor pool, you know, safe and secure environment. In a combat situation, it's a little different. It may depend on your function in the combat arms or your function in the Army as a whole. Me as a combat engineer, our company was charged with roadside bombs. And we'd go down a road and we'd find a bomb, we'd take care of that bomb, and then we move on to the next thing. And sometimes these patrols were days on days, you know, moving from one bomb to the next. And then when we got back, obviously our first priority was getting stuff cleaned up for the next time we were on the road. But you got to have that time to decompress. And unfortunately, where we were at in Afghanistan, you can only go so far. There was always the threat of rockets coming in. There was always the threat of suicide bombers. I mean, there was always a heightened threat. So critical things that we did was send soldiers, you know, back home on R&R, find other ways to decompress. I'd walk around with a funny hat, or, you know, I'd grew my mustache a little bit large, or, yeah. I did funny things to, you know, try to, you know, boost morale.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, what you were doing in regards to the roadside bombs, is that what we saw in the movie, The Hurt Locker?
Not that dramatic. It's a little bit more mundane than that. But that's what makes it so hard. It's the mundane after the mundane after the mundane. But soldier didn't have the luxury to, you know, yeah, of recovering. You know, it's mundane. So.
And as a leader in that type of environment, how do you keep morale up?
The biggest thing is try to bring home to the combat zone as best as possible. Satellite phones were huge. Connecting back home as video teleconferencing. We did a lot of barbecues. I would cook for the soldiers. And then, like I said, realizing that things could always be worse.
You make good barbecue?
I don't make good barbecue, but in Afghanistan, everything's good.
Good.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, I try. I really do. But, I mean, we were even on the road at Christmas morning. You know, it was snowing. It was miserable. The wind chill was like minus 32, and we were up there doing what we had to do. But I didn't get the luxury of opening up a Christmas present. But it paid dividends in other places. I mean, my soldiers were obviously safe. They were secure. They all made it home off the road that day. And we were all happier, you know, because we were a tighter family. We were family away from a family. So yeah, that's what Christmas is really truly about, is being with family.
Right, right. What is your favorite book on leadership?
You know, there's a lot of books, and it depends what you're really looking for.
But what's your favorite?
My favorite. It's a pretty simple book. It's by a guy, a writer named Frank Pichetta. It's very practical. It's not theoretical. And it's called Don't Fire Them, Fire Them Up. And it's got a lot of anecdotes.
I'm not like Mitch Romney. He likes to fire people.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-oh. I think we're losing our focus here. But it takes a lot of anecdotes, and it's very very common sense approach to leadership. Frank Pichetta, he kind of made Xerox what it is today, you know, household name. So he talks about don't inspect in things until you inspect them and things of that. So me being a down and dirty infantry guy, a soldier, it was stuff I could take with me and put it in my backpack, put it in my toolbox. So I definitely appreciate it. And I keep a copy today. I read it 10 years ago. It's an easy read. I go through it every couple months.
Frank Pichetta from Xerox.
Yeah.
I should know that because I worked at Xerox.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Have you never heard of him?
No.
He was a big sales guy. And okay. I guess the sales department was really inefficient at the time. It was like some antiquated systems. And
wow.
He kind of like bolstered the department.
Yeah, that's where I got my training.
Oh, Xerox, really?
Xerox sales, yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. We need to go ahead and try to find Frank.
Exactly. No, I mean, I found that the Xerox sales process is really the foundation of what I teach here at Seton Hall.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
And the consultative sales course that we teach here. And Xerox training is the foundation of that. You know, a lot of discipline, a lot of focus. It's all about consistency.
He's very a staunch advocate of being prepared.
Right.
He's all about doing the homework before the work. And a lot of that, it sounds like hard work, but it makes sure that you're ready for the team.
Preparation.
It's preparation, and it's a not necessarily a value on your time, but it's the value on the people that you're working with's time, you know. And that's one kind of the things I try to bring to the fight for my cadets.
It's nothing worse than for a group of folks to go into a meeting and their manager's not prepared.
Exactly.
They're sitting around, the manager's fiddling with his papers, his computer, or whatever it was, and people are like, I could be doing something else.
Or even worse, you're sitting there for the manager to show up 30, 40 minutes later, and he hasn't showed up yet.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so,
exactly.
You know, having a regard for people's time, I think that's critical.
It is very important.
Yeah.
Very important.
So, and it's all about that team dynamic. It really is, and to foster that.
And ROTC, I guess they have a particular mission. What is their stated mission?
It's actually just to train and commission lieutenants.
Okay.
And like I said, it's here at Seton Hall. We try to take, you know, we're all about uptaking the standard and notching up a little bit. And we're all about agile, physically, mentally agile lieutenants. And like I said, it's critical. We're asking lieutenants to do so much more than their counterparts did 20 years ago.
I noticed that the ROTC cadets it's a very diverse group.
Mm-hmm.
Seton Hall has recently, over the last few years, have been getting a number of students from mainland China. Have you had any of our international students to join ROTC?
No, not yet. No.
Or do you have to be a U.S. citizen to join ROTC?
No, you have to be a U.S. citizen to commission.
To commission.
Right. But, I mean, we do have some, you know, some people that are U.S. citizens now. But, I mean, none of the mainland China. And we can learn a lot from the Chinese. Obviously, we've heard a lot about the Chinese during the political debates and everything. But fundamentally, they bring a work. You know, they have a great work ethic.
Awesome.
Yeah, education is on you know, way above par than, you know, American standards. You know, they have a 6-day, you know, school schedule. You know, so we could definitely learn a lot from them.
I had a when I was working as the chief marketing officer for a company called Collexis, I had two interns here at Seton Hall from China. Phenomenal work ethic.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. I mean, their whole culture, you know, everything from the...
Speaking about the Great Wall, have you seen the Great Wall?
No, I haven't had the luxury yet. It's definitely on my bucket list. I want to see the Forbidden City, the Great Wall, and then eventually, hopefully, get to see the old Shaolin Temple.
I did not. I was in Beijing this past May, well, last May, and I went to the Great Wall, and I saw the Forbidden City, but I did not get the Shaolin Temple.
Oh, my goodness.
I'll do that on my next trip. But the Great Wall, it is just phenomenal. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
It's one of the few man-made structures you can see for space. I mean, amazing. Did you get a chance to see the Olympic complex at all there? Or?
I drove by it. I mean, I guess they call it the Outer Ring.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's beautiful.
Amazing.
The nest, yeah, it's beautiful.
It's amazing.
It's beautiful. And that's the thing about China that is so just phenomenal. It's just a phenomenal place. But everything that they're doing there is huge. The universities that they're building, they're huge. The roads are like 8 lanes. I mean, just in the city.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. You know, and they're planting trees like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the air is not too good there.
Ah.
Yeah, the air is, it's tough there. I came back and I was coughing for about 2 months. Yeah.
That's interesting. I definitely have to remember that. And when I decide to go to China, you know, stick to the country and those sites.
Exactly. Have you published any articles about leadership?
No, I'm actually working on one as we speak. It's going to be titled something along the effects of. I'm kind of toying around with it, but a good plan is better today than the perfect plan tomorrow, and talking about taking initiative and acting quickly, being decisive, and it's something that we definitely need to bring. That can be used not just in the Army, but, you know.
Everywhere. Procrastination is a killer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, time is one of those, you know, those resources that diminishes with the minute. So yeah, if we can develop a not only just a good work ethic, but, you know, learning how to be more decisive and coming up with a deliberate decision-making process, but taking that process and streamline it to the point where you can be decisive and actually make decisions on the road. On the fly, that'd be great. And, you know, a lot of times during my career, I'd air my, not just air my decisions, but I'd also, you know, just let people know my thought process,
right.
You know, just so when the decision was made, you know, we were all in agreement. But, you know, as people build confidence in my decision-making process, you know, that you know, they didn't necessarily need my thought process, and I was able to easily make, you know, streamlined decisions on the fly. So I think it'll be a great tool for our up-and-coming leaders, our cadets, and hopefully for our junior soldiers as well.
How do you choose who's going to be the leaders among the cadets? Because I noticed that when they're in the gym in the morning,
right.
You know, you got some folks who are giving instruction and whatnot.
Yeah, it's just a strict rotation. All the cadets have to be in a leadership position. They have to get rated. They have to get assessed. And they have to do it so many times within the school year, within the semester. So it's just a roster, a running roster, and they get rotated out every couple of weeks.
Okay. So everybody gets a turn.
Most of the sophomores and the juniors.
Okay.
And the seniors are pretty much the assessors, and the freshmen that they don't have the skill set yet to actually lead soldiers yet or cadets. Mm-hmm. So they'll get their chance, you know, the next coming year.
And I noticed that when they have the rifles, I guess it has a light to track how accurate they are when they're shooting.
Just a passive infrared, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Army's kind of cut back on our ammunition allotment. Every now and then we'll be fortunate enough to take soldiers out on the actual range and shoot a very limited amount of ammunition. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's our basic fundamental. You know, we're soldiers first, and you know,
right.
And scholars second. But
so are they trained and not only with the is it an M16 or
yes,
and what about the sidearm? Do they get the experience with a sidearm?
Well, most lieutenants won't even see a sidearm until they're in the Army for about 4 years. So there's not a whole lot of – it's more novelty than anything else. So they won't see an actual sidearm. Mm-hmm. It actually took me about 10, 15 years before I was actually issued a sidearm.
Really?
Right. And, you know, now, you know, with the war in Iraq
So with the war in Iraq, you were saying that every officer gets a sidearm?
For the most part, most of the combat arms units, an officer will have a sidearm and an actual rifle. Mm-hmm. Sidearms we use are the 9mm Berettas. We used to have the old M1911s.
Okay.
And it's a pretty durable weapon, and it's obviously been proving itself, right. So it's a good weapon to have.
Beretta's pretty sweet, though.
Beretta's are sweet, and hopefully we'll get to the point where we all got Glocks. I'd love a Glock.
Well, I think the 6 hour is better.
6 hour is good. It's all about smooth action.
That's right.
When it comes to the military, it's all about durability, dragging it through the mud and the sand and still firing.
That's right.
It's all about, you know, it's a very practical weapon.
That's right. And do your cadets keep in touch with you after they're commissioned?
I'm kind of new, so I'm definitely in touch. I'm not the Facebook kind of guy, but I do get the occasional visit once they finish from training, or I'll get the occasional email. But soldiers and former leaders, I definitely have a lifelong network. That camaraderie will definitely last you a lifetime.
So what specific programs do you want to champion here at Seton Hall for ROTC, or is it just – you just carry out what the duties are, or are you looking to enhance it with any new type of programs?
Not a whole lot. I mean, we're very regimented in what we do. We definitely want to boost our name recognition. We definitely want to appeal to a different, a broader demographic. We're talking about actually rappelling from the Prudential Center during, some of the basketball games. Yeah.
On the outside or inside?
On the inside.
Really?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
It's not known yet. We're still in the planning stages, but
that'd be pretty cool.
It'd be a different way to deliver the game ball. So we're actually talking about doing that.
Right.
But for the most part, ROTC is very, very regimented. Mm-hmm. Our cadet command actually delivers our programs of instruction, and we can tailor it to suit the student and suit the academic environment, but for the most part, they have to meet all these gates before they actually go into the regular Army. So,
that is awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. What closing thoughts would you like to leave with our audience about why, if they have a son or a daughter who are going to come to Seton Hall, why they should consider the ROTC program?
I think the biggest thing is if we just take out of the equation that there's a global war on terrorism, I think the biggest thing is marketability. An ROTC graduate put up next to his contemporary as Seton Hall graduate is more of a practical decision maker, resource. He knows how to manage resources and people, and multitasker, so you'll definitely get more bang for your buck out of an ROTC cadet as opposed to just a regular graduate. So it's kind of an accreditation. It really is.
We have 10 seconds for a quick quote. Any favorite quote on leadership that you'd like to share with our audience?
Oh, for sure. I love Rosalind Carter's, "A leader takes people where they want to go. A great leader takes people where they don't necessarily want to go, but ought to be." And that kind of just, that's my wife right there. I'm a good leader, and I'm definitely in a place I don't want to be all the time. And she got me there, so thank you, honey.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Well, Master Sergeant Rodriguez, I want to thank you for coming on the program the last 2 weeks. I've learned a lot about the program, and I know it's in great hands under your leadership.
Well, if you ever have any questions or any inputs, definitely swing by and pay us a visit.
We'll certainly do that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're here with Master Sergeant Victor Rodriguez.